Greetings, listeners and friends of the RAOTC. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old-Timers Club of Australia, saying welcome to this broadcast for December 2020. I am Bruce, VK3UV.
And I am Ian, VK3JS, here to help present this program.
And together we hope you will enjoy this bulletin of news and information. You are aware that the VK2 and VK3 COVID lockdowns have now been lifted, and life is slowly getting back to normal. But we should not be too complacent, and we must continue to be careful, especially when we are at our radio club meetings or out in the shopping centres, and continue to be vigilant and wear masks where appropriate. This broadcast is relayed on a number of frequencies on the first Monday of the month, except for January. The transmissions emanate from many different sources, and the actual times and frequencies may be found on our website, www.raotc.org.au. Now, I would like to thank all of our volunteers who have helped with the relaying of this broadcast, as without them there would be no national transmissions. Club News. This broadcast is being recorded prior to our quarterly committee meeting, which was due to be held by Zoom video conferencing on Thursday the 26th of November. One of the items under discussion is the future of these broadcasts, and if there is anything to be changed, a press release will be published on our website. In the meantime, if you have any comment in this respect, please let your thoughts be known in the callbacks at the end of this broadcast. Now here is our member news, and we welcome one new member to the RAOTC. We welcome Gary Dewar, VK6LZ, previous call sign VK6LEC, and he became Associate RAOTC member number 1799 on the 15th of November 2020. And regretfully, we have been advised of two silent keys. Norm Phillips, VK4CNP, RAOTC member number 1015, became a silent key on the 20th of October this year, at the grand old age of 100. And also, we have Robert Bosmer, VK6SB, RAOTC member number 1768, and he became a silent key in early November of this year. We now pause for a few moments in memory of our departed colleagues. Thank you. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old-Timers Club of Australia. Our first talk is entitled Hamshack Hotline. The RAOTC exists for many reasons. Some see us as old and crusty, rusted-on ham radio operators who are against change of any kind, and still living in the 1940s and 1950s amateur technology. And others see us as progressive and willing to change with new scientific inventions and innovations. Ian and I consider ourselves to be in the latter category, even though we are both well past the retiring age. The latest innovations with ham radio is digital modes. They, of course, have been with us for many years and are being improved all the time. Whether we like it or not, digital modes have most of their functions using the internet. That is a major function and one aspect of how ham radio works in this modern world. With sunspot activity just coming into cycle 25, and that will again give rise to great HF contacts, with digital modes that interstate or DX station you work on D-Star or DMR comes to you via the internet. Yes, initially the contact is made via your VHF or UHF licensed amateur radio transceiver to a digitally linked repeater or hotspot. Here is an article I picked up from social media, and its heading is Ham Shack Hotline, the bat phone for ham radio operators. For those that may find this interesting, amateur radio has its very own telephone network, ideal for those doing WISN, organisation testing, repeater station managers, etc. A very handy tool. After the purchase of the phone, it is absolutely free, ideal for clubs and its members. The author of the following article is Matt Kaskovich, K0LWC. And now Matt tells us, Ham Shack Hotline is a dedicated Voice Over the Internet Protocol, VOIP, a network that is free to amateur radio operators around the world. The goal of the Ham Shack Hotline is not to replace the traffic that is carried over RF, but rather augment it when conditions are diminished or otherwise busy. You will find phones in personal ham shacks, club stations, and mobile command posts. The hotline is the brainchild of John Rogers, K1WIZ. He always imagined having a VOIP network dedicated just to ham radio operators. It's been widely adopted by emergency services centres, ham radio clubs and amateur radio emergency services groups, and individual ham shacks alike. Why should you get a ham shack hotline? I can already feel the ham radio purists glaring. There are many that say having a dedicated VOIP network is stupid, but that couldn't be more wrong. Ham radio is not just about RF, and not just about radio frequency communication. Personally, ham radio is about communication. Getting a message from one person to another by any means possible, using our technical skills. Look at what's happened in public safety communication the past two decades. Agencies have shifted toward digital in a huge way. Even local businesses are ditching analog in droves. The future of communication is digital, whether some hams like it or not. The value of being on Ham Shack Hotline can be simple. You're chatting on HF and conditions fade out. You could call another ham and let them know conditions faded. You could also use that line of communication to reliably experiment with your HF equipment without losing communication during that experimentation. However, the real value in my mind is in tactical situations. Services like Ham Shack Hotline become powerful when used strategically by groups, organisations or packs of individuals. Don't get me wrong, I love playing with VOIP and learning about it for my own education, but the true power is in organisation or structures adopting the technology. What you'll find on Ham Shack Hotline. There are many great features on Ham Shack Hotline. You can have a phone book of individual lines you can dial. There is also a list of bridges where many phones can connect and interconnect on a single line. The system not only supports voice calls, but also faxing documents if you have the necessary hardware. The network is capable of linking between VOIP and RF. You will find links to the Ham Shack Hotline talk group on the DMR Brandmeister network. There are numerous other bridges that are linked to RF repeaters around the world. The Ham Shack Hotline service supports links to RF repeaters. Ham Shack Hotline is made up of three standard networks. HHUS United States, HSEU Europe, HSAP Asia Pacific, and one experimental network called HHX. All networks are integrated, so calls from any extension can call across all networks. Ham Shack Hotline provides support for various VOIP phones that range in cost and features. You can get a phone as cheap as $35 up to $150. Some of the Cisco phones currently support Ham Shack Hotline. To learn more about this interesting subject, simply do a Google search on Ham Shack Hotline. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia. Now, our next talk is from Ian, and he introduces us to Mark Oliphant.
I would be surprised if the name Mark Oliphant was not reasonably well known, especially to older listeners. Here is an article that I came across in October 2018 about this eminent physicist. It's written by Jeff Glorfeld, a correspondent to Cosmos magazine. Marcus, or Mark Lawrence Elwin Oliphant, was born on October the 8th, 1901, in Kent Town, a suburb of Adelaide, South Australia. Having moved to Britain in the late 1930s, he headed a Birmingham University team secretly researching high-power oscillators for improved radar capabilities. The Guardian newspaper, in its obituary for Oliphant, who died on July the 14th, 2000, said his group, quote, played a crucial role in winning the Second World War in the air by making shortwave radar possible. In 1950, Oliphant had a hand in starting the Australian National University and served as its first director of the Research School of Physical Sciences and Engineering. In 1954, he established the Australian Academy of Science and was its first president until 1956. He was later appointed as Governor of South Australia by the state's Premier, Don Dunstan, and contributed to the formation of a new political party, since folded, called the Australian Democrats. In its obituary for him, The Economist wrote that, quote, during his five-year gubernatorial term, he spoke out on the issues that worried him, the environment, racism, the importance of the family, themes that stayed with him for the rest of his life, end of quote. Still, despite all that and more, Oliphant remains best known for his contribution to the development of the atomic bomb. According to the Encyclopedia of World Biography, Oliphant and his colleagues at Cavendish Laboratory, part of Cambridge University, UK, were the first to split the atom in 1932. Oliphant himself discovered the elements helium-3 and tritium, and also found that the nuclei of heavy hydrogen could be forced to react with one another and to fuse together. It was this discovery of fusion that led the way to the hydrogen bomb. In its biography of Oliphant, the Atomic Heritage Foundation writes, quote, while researching radar at the University of Birmingham in 1940, Oliphant received the findings of German scientists Otto Frisch and Rudolf Paetz, who had calculated that a uranium-235 atomic bomb was feasible. Realizing that the weapons could turn the tide of war, Oliphant took their findings to British government officials. End of quote. A committee of nuclear physicists in Britain was formed, codenamed MAUD, M-A-U-D, and tasked with investigating how much uranium-235 would be needed to produce a bomb. In 1941, the committee reported that a critical mass of 10 kilograms would be sufficient to create a Titanic blast. MAUD members concluded that Britain didn't have the resources to build such a device, so they handed their research to an American physicist, Charles Lauritsen, who passed it on to Lyman Briggs, head of the American Uranium Committee. Briggs, however, didn't distribute the MAUD report. Concerned by the lack of reaction to their work, the committee sent Oliphant to the US to lobby for a joint US-British atomic bomb project. Oliphant bypassed Briggs and talked up the possibility of an atomic bomb with senior government officials. As a result, the Uranium Committee became the S1 project of the Office of Scientific Research and Development, and in December 1941, following the attack on Pearl Harbor, the project was titled the Manhattan Project. Later in life, Oliphant became a noteworthy pacifist, but was clearly worried about his own initial motivations and those of his peer. Quote, I learned during the war that if you pay people well and the work's exciting, they'll work on anything, he is quoted as saying. There's no difficulty getting doctors to work on biological warfare, chemists to work on chemical warfare, and physicists to work on nuclear warfare. End of quote.
This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia.
At this point, we were going to bring you another historically oriented story until we realised that we had used it earlier in the year. So in its place, here are two very short items which I hope you will find interesting.
I'm sure that some of you realise that as well as being historically oriented, I believe that we as modern day amateurs should keep abreast of modern developments, and that the articles that I present have this in mind. Here's a little article that I found in Cosmos magazine during May, and it's Welcome to the World of Twistronics, Electronics with a Twist. There is increasing interest in the potential of the ultimate 2D materials, those consisting of just a single layer of atoms, because of their impressive properties such as high conductivity, flexibility and strength. Think applications in lasers, sensors and the like. When a sheet of such 2D material is placed over another and slightly rotated, the twist can radically change the bilayer material's properties and lead to exotic physical behaviours. Now, researchers led by Finland's Aalto University say they have taken an important step forward by developing a way to make these twisted layers on scales that are large enough to be useful. Their new method for transferring single atom layers of molybdenum disulfide, MOS2, described in a paper in the journal Nature Communications, allows them to control precisely the twist angle between layers with up to a square centimetre in area, they say. Quote, our demonstrated twist method allows us to tune the properties of stacked multi-layer MOS2 structures on larger scales than ever before, end of quote, says Lucien Du, one of the lead authors. The transfer method can also apply to other two-dimensional layered materials. Du and colleagues say previous research has demonstrated that it is possible to fabricate the required twist angle, but the sample size has usually been less than the width of a human hair. Larger few-layer films have also been fabricated, but their interlayer twist angle is random. Here's a little piece of philosophy that was printed in the second edition of OTN Journal in March 1986. It's entitled Persistence. Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent. The slogan, press on, has solved and always will solve the problems of the human race.
and that is alleged to have been written by Teddy Roosevelt of America. And when you think about it, there's a lot of relevance there to today's problems associated with our COVID-19 lockdown.
This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia. Here is an article about Voyager 2, and it was published in the Daily Mail of Australia on the 5th of November 2020, and written by Stacey Liberatore. NASA re-establishes contact with 43-year-old Voyager 2, which is 11.6 billion miles from the Earth, after repairs to an antenna in Australia left the spacecraft flying solo for 7 months. The main points are, Voyager 2 has been travelling through space since launching in 1977. The spacecraft is now more than 11.6 billion miles away from Earth. NASA cut off communication with the probe in March to repair a satellite. The Deep Space Station 43 antenna in Australia went back online and sent Voyager 2 a signal. The craft received the signal and sent a reply that reached NASA 34 hours later. NASA has re-established contact with its Voyager 2 spacecraft as it travels more than 11.6 billion miles from Earth, after the probe was left flying solo for 7 months, while repairs were made to the radio antenna in Australia they used to control it. Mission operators sent a series of commands to the 43-year-old probe using the ground-based Deep Station 43, DSS 43, antenna, which established a signal confirming the call was received. DSS 43 had been offline since March, while NASA completed a series of hardware upgrades, but tested the new components by sending commands to the craft. However, due to the distance, the ground team had to wait more than 34 hours for a reply. But Voyager 2 received the commands and sent back a hello. DSS 43 is located in Australia and is part of a collection of radio antennas around the world that combine to communicate with any spacecraft beyond the moon. The Australian satellite dish is one of three others that are part of the Deep Space Network. The others two include Goldstone, California, and Madrid in Spain. The successful call suggests DSS 43 will be back online fully in February 2021. Brad Arnold, the DSN project manager at NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab in Southern California, said, "What makes this task unique is that they're doing work at all levels of the antenna, from the pedestal at ground level all the way up to the free cones at the center of the dish that extend above the rim. This test communication with Voyager 2 definitely tells us that things are on track with the work we're doing." In 1989, the spacecraft flew over Neptune's North Pole as it made a close flyby, which pushed it southward, and it has been heading in this direction ever since. Now, more than 11.6 billion miles from Earth, the spacecraft is so far south that it doesn't have a line of sight with radio antennas in the northern hemisphere. DSS 43 is the only technology on our planet with a transmitter powerful enough to reach such a distance, and it is now receiving science data of interstellar space from the probe. The massive 111-foot-wide dish has been operating since 1972, 5 years before Voyager 2 launched into space, and just received its most significant MACO. Philip Baldwin, Operations Manager for NASA Space Communication and Navigations Program, said, "The DSS-43 antenna is a highly specialized system there are only two other similar systems in the world. So having the antenna down for 1 year is not an ideal situation for Voyager or for many other NASA missions. The agency made the decision to conduct these upgrades to ensure that the antenna can continue to be used for current and future missions. For an antenna that is almost 50 years old, it's better to be proactive than reactive with critical maintenance. Not only did the repairs help the dish make contact with Voyager 2, but the upgrades will also benefit other missions, including the Mars Perseverance rover, which will land on the Red Planet in February 2021. Where are the Voyagers now? Voyager 1 is currently 13 billion miles away from Earth, traveling northward through space. The probe has recently sent back data to NASA that cosmic rays are as much as 4 times more abundant in interstellar space than in the vicinity of Earth. This suggests that the heliosphere, the region of space that contains our solar system's planets, may act as a radiation shield. Meanwhile, Voyager 2 is now 11.6 billion miles from Earth, travelling south towards the interstellar region. The contrasting locations of the two spacecraft allow scientists to compare two regions of space where the heliosphere interacts with the interstellar medium. Voyager 2 crossing into the interstellar medium allows scientists to sample the medium from two different locations at the same time. You are listening to VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old-Timers Club of Australia. It has been a long-standing practice of these broadcasts to finish off with something humorous. So here is today's offering. Being the final broadcast for 2020, and the Christmas festive season being almost upon us, here is a special Christmassy flavour joke. Three men die on Christmas Eve. To get onto heaven, St. Peter says, "You must have something on you that represents Christmas to get in." The Englishman flicks on his lighter and says, "It's a candle." St. Peter lets him pass. The Welshman jingles his keys and says, "They're jingle bells." St. Peter nods and lets him pass. Then Paddy steps up to the door and pulls out a bra out of his jacket pocket. St. Peter says, "What has this got to do with Christmas?" Paddy answers, "They're carols." Thank you for listening. This now concludes our session for this month. There will be no broadcast in January 2021, and Ian and I wish you the very best for Christmas and New Year 2021, and hope that you will give several CQs whenever you can. The bands are not dead, and Sunspot Cycle 25 is waiting for us. All being well, we shall be back with you on Monday, the 1st of February 2021. A reminder, if you want to contact us, please do so via our website, which is www.raotc.org.au. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia, saying 73, and listening now for any check-ins and callbacks for those relay stations that have an operator available. Thank you.